What's going on, Canada? You know, one of the secrets of radio is that when the regular host leaves, he or she actually leaves you their shoes. And while Evan is a tall and very handsome man, I have to tell you this, probably wouldn't want me to tell you this, very small shoes he's left me. Tiny shoes. In other ways, very, very small shoes to fill for me. So let me put on those tiny shoes and walk right in to the war room.
Let me be perfectly clear.
Putting out misinformation.
And we hear them.
Misleading politics.
What's really important here.
Spreading it online.
Unequivocally.
The War Room.
I like that. I like that more than anyone else did. But you know what? I'm fine with that. Tom Mulcair, CTV political analyst and former NDP leader. Tasha Carradine, a principal with Navigator and national political columnist for Post Media. And Susan Smith, principal at Blue Sky Strategy Group. Hello, friends. How's it going?
Hey, Zane.
Hey, well, listen, how's those shoes feeling?
Well, listen, I feel great because while Evan has also left me his shoes, he's also left me his book of dad jokes, which I'm not going to crack open. I know he uses it too heavily. But how is this for transition material? Tasha, I'm going to start with you. Speaking of dad jokes, Aaron O'Toole is saying that the Conservative Party is not your father's Conservative Party anymore. He starts the day saying that. He ends the day campaigning with someone whose dad probably voted for the conservative leader at that time, Brian Mulroney. What do you think of this positioning, Tasha, for Aaron O'Toole in this endgame of really trying to own the PC stripes in these final days?
Well, you know, I mean, Justin Trudeau trotted out John Chrétien the day before. This isn't an unheard of thing. Past leaders tend to make appearances in campaigns, especially in this campaign where things are so tight. And I mean, Brian Mulroney is incredibly popular, particularly in Quebec still. And with the older members of the party, some like me who remember him when I was a member of the party, that is, back in the day, that he was, you know, a very well-regarded leader and former leader now. So I think that's where that came from. I mean, some people would say that, you know, you would want it to be your father's party because back then it was the Progressive Conservative Party. So
sure.
I'm not sure what father's party O'Toole was alluding to, which father he was, you know, was Stephen Harper, was it Brian Mulroney? Anyway, I think that, honestly, it's just what campaigns do. I don't read a lot into it.
Tom, you know, I've had a blanket rule. For me, I've just said influencers, regardless of whether they're past PMs or celebrities or whatnot, they just don't work. I think people see right through that strategy of someone being coerced to show up on stage. Am I wrong? Or do you feel like what you've seen with both perhaps Chrétien and Mulroney could pay dividends for the two front runners in this campaign?
Well, then there's Hazel McCallion, the former longtime mayor of
Mississauga. Well, she undermined her endorsement in many ways, to be honest.
she's a real influencer. Look, Trudeau just got a nice letter from Barack Obama. I mean, you know, could be a better than that. Mm. Quick quiz question. Which candidate got an endorsement from Jane Fonda on the first day? Avi Lewis, running for the NDP out in British Columbia. So it's all part of the game. I'm not 100% sure, though. It works well. Talking about endorsements, a week ago today, François Legault pretty well openly endorsed Aaron O'Toole. And then all hell broke loose on the English debate with the first question. And the rest, as they say, is history. So you're never too sure how it's going to turn out. Legault's endorsement doesn't mean a heck of a lot right now because everybody turned back towards the Bloc here in Quebec. With regard to Barack Obama, I mean, you know, he says, you know, great for democracy, but that just reminds progressives that the biggest broken promise of Justin Trudeau was on democratic reform. So, I'm not 100% sure that having people from the outside, especially in America, no matter how well he was respected on the world stage, is going to help Mr. Trudeau or anybody else at this point.
Some of us were concerned, by the way, Tom, that the Barack Obama, Justin Trudeau bromance would not continue, would not find itself another chapter. But worry not, Canada. A tweet has been sent from one Barack Obama. Susan, you know, talk to me about this positioning by O'Toole in the endgame, because I find it fascinating, because one of the things I've been saying, and perhaps too simplistically, is that our political spectrum, and maybe this election has showcased it, is starting to move to the left, right? Where you have, you know, Jagmeet Singh clearly competing for traditional NDP territory. You got Justin Trudeau marching further left than a liberal government has in recent memory. And then you now have O'Toole kind of saying, oh, is there some lost liberal terrain here that I can find? What do you think of his positioning of the going from true blue in the leadership to outflanking McKay to now owning what I would say is former liberal turf in some ways.
Well, a couple things. I think Canadians largely hang out around the center, though for Mr. O'Toole, this is a bit of dangerous territory for him, precisely the way you pointed it out. He campaigned for the leadership as a true blue conservative. That's, you know, he was in Stephen Harper's cabinet. That's who he purported to represent, remember, against the progressive Peter McKay. And now he's trotting out Brian Mulroney and he's trying to show that he's got a bigger tent. This is risky for him, especially with the rise, sadly, of Max Bernier. And while I like, you know, I'm a blue liberal, so I prefer to hang out in the middle of the spectrum on things.
Right,
I don't
right.
think he's really going to convince blue liberals or soft liberals to come over to him in this particular case, simply because he's flip-flopped around so much and on issues that are key for people, like climate change, like, I wouldn't say gun control is a key issue, but it's an example of his leadership, and the vaccine question. Those are things that he's trying to keep in the right wing of the party while at the same time trying to bring in the progressive side. In the end, I do think this election will be about a progressive vote versus the conservative vote. And it'll be interesting to see how it splits. But I think this tactic of Mr. O'Toole, as Mr. Krejci said, Mr. Krejci cracked a joke this week and he said, Aaron O'Toole can do what I can't do, talk out of both sides of my mouth. Only Mr. Krejci can say that about himself. It was pretty funny, but I think in this case, it's true. Mr. O'Toole's trying to have it both ways.
You know,
I think that there's a point. Yeah. Well, with regard to Susan's point, I think it's worth pointing out that anytime the Liberals tried to stick things to him, like right at the beginning, he's an anti-vaxxer, he's anti-choice, they threw the book at him and it didn't stick. But what happened was, as O'Toole made it quite clear that he was serious about dealing with climate change, even though his program, of course, is a little bit of fiction, but he talked about the guns. He was quite different from anything that the Conservatives had said before. So that was starting to bleed votes towards Maxime Bernier. We all see that in the polls. But at the same time, anytime the Liberals started trying to say, by the way, this guy's a right-wing crackpot, implicitly or explicitly, O'Toole or the people around him got to say, right-wing crackpot, oh, you must be talking about our friend Maxime Bernier, because that's where the crackpots go. They're with him, not with us. So trying to tie O'Toole to the anti-vaxxers at those crowds, which is something Mr. Trudeau did for about 5-6 days right at the beginning of those protests, they stopped doing that because it wasn't working. And it was clear that Maxime Bernier is the home for all of these right-wing lunatics.
You know, Tasha, I want to pick up on this from your perspective as someone who's kind of worn the conservative jersey. You know, from what you see, are you worried that this strategy could actually undermine the strategy of trying to move to PC could undermine Aaron O'Toole and might actually lead to an election night loss where he perhaps took the bait and went too far left?
Well, he's damned if he does, and he's damned if he doesn't. This is the issue: is how do you stop that bleeding to the PPC of people who have grievances against, conservative, as they see conservative light or red Toryism or progressive conservatism, people who say, no, that's not my home. How do you say to them, and the only thing he's really been able to say is, if you split the vote, and there was, I saw something out today, Nick Kouvalis polling company saying, if you split the vote, if you go PPC, it's a vote for Trudeau. It's the same as saying a vote for Jagmeet Singh. It's a vote for Aaron O'Toole. Aaron O'Toole can say. He cannot appeal to the better angels of the people in the PPC because they want nothing to do with him. They have their own motivations for being over there. So it's very difficult. But yes, broadening the tent, you're going to lose people off the edges and the fringes, and that is a growing fringe. I do believe the PPC will be a spoiler in some ridings. Estimates ranging up to 10 ridings that they could spoil things for the Tories.
It's fascinating. And Tom, I'll pick it up with you after the break, because I want to talk about what the strategic implications for each of the leaders in the end games look like. We'll also talk about BIPOC cabinet representation, a question my CTV's Omar Sachedina posed to Justin Trudeau. Could be interesting. The War Room on the other side.
Let me be perfectly clear.
Putting out misinformation.
And we hear them.
Misleading politics.
What's really important here.
Spreading it online.
Unequivocally.
The War Room.
back with you, Zane Velji here, the War Room. Also here with me, Susan Smith, principal at Blue Sky Strategy Group. Tasha Carradine, principal with Navigator Limited and a national political columnist for Post Media. And of course, Tom Mulcair, CTV political analyst and former NDP leader. Hello, friends, again. You know, here's where I want to pick it up. And no, the answer is not with Evan's dad jokes book, which I'm not picking up. But I want to talk about, I will refuse to. I would rather let the show be a total disaster than to even inflict one of those upon not just you, but the listening public. I won't do it. I won't do it, Evan. Here's what I want to pick up, though. And Susan, maybe I'll start with you on this. Is Liberal leader Justin Trudeau said he won't formally commit to a specific target for representation of Black, Indigenous, and people of color in cabinet. This, of course, despite doing so in 2015. Here's an interview clip with CTV National News' Omar Sachedina yesterday, in which Trudeau kind of responded to.
I commit to continuing to doing more. What we have done over the past years is bring in far more diversity into the Prime Minister's office than ever before, into cabinet. We're going to continue to make sure that we're the party that not just upholds diversity in Canada, but embodies it.
Susan, you know, as the leader who embraced the Black Lives Matter movement, who took that knee at the protests, who's clearly, you know, talking about reconciliation and wants to make it a priority, should he have just said yes to that question to perhaps avoid the attacks of more symbolism than commitments in action?
Well, Omar asked him if he would commit to a 50% target. And yep. The lead up to that was he also said that, you know, 30% of the Prime Minister's staff right now identify as BIPOC. And it's obviously all in the context of 50% gender equity cabinet. You know what, Zane, I spoke to a friend. I'm a white woman. So I called up a friend who's in politics and who is a member of the BIPOC community. And I said, what do you think of this? And the person said to me, their response was, the Prime Minister has already had, he's walked the talk on the most diverse cabinet that the country has ever seen. The person said, I heard in their answer their continued commitment to that. And their belief was, when you have people around the table who have lived experiences, and you have a cabinet that looks like the Canadian population, and the Prime Minister has made a commitment to that, that person was comfortable with that answer. So I believe the Prime Minister when he says he wants to continue to have as much diversity as possible. I think hard numbers like that are sometimes difficult because the cabinet has to represent the country regionally from gender and from an ethnic composition. So there are many things that go into cabinet making, and I believe Trudeau will always continue to look at all of those things when he does it.
You know, Tom, what I found interesting about the question, I'll get to the politics in a second, but I'll highlight this, was the ask for the commitment to Susan's point about 50%, not just for cabinet, but for the decision makers in the PMO. And as you know, as this panel certainly knows, that a lot of the decisions in this country are made by unelected political staff. So, Tom, when you heard that question from both a policy and, frankly, political perspective of what this could mean to the Prime Minister, where was your head at when you heard that question and, Justin Trudeau's response?
Well, Omar Sachedina is in a good position to be asking that question, isn't he? Yeah. And, you know, he's fluently bilingual, but he's got his own background and he's probably had to navigate in a world that was mostly white when he came into it. He's been there for a few years now. But I think that Mr. Trudeau is trying to have it both ways because he has made that commitment in the past. It has been pointed out to him in previous interviews that there were really qualified Black people, for example, in his caucus. And just for the sake of it, BIPOC is a word that we keep using the acronym for, but for everybody listening, that's, you know, Black, Indigenous, and people of color.
Yep.
So Mr. Trudeau has made that commitment before, fallen short, had really good people who weren't being named. That was always a bit of a mystery to me. And I think that he could have done a lot more. Also, we've got out there right now, Jody Wilson-Raybould and Cesar Chavannes, out there, you know, banging the drum about their bad treatment at the hands of Justin Trudeau. So he does have a lot of explaining to do. Susan's right. You know, he can point to him, his cabinet and his staff as having been far more diverse than Stephen Harper's. But I'm not sure that that's the standard you want to be measured by.
You know, Tasha, from your perspective, as Trudeau tries to make the final sprint, I've saying, you know, to try to get those red orange switchers. Do you think a story like this or a response like this could be an added proof point to maybe not a holistic lack of commitment, but a lack of hard commitment on a topic that he clearly wants to be positioned as a champion on.
Well, it is interesting that he did, you know, set a target for women, a very clear target, and trumpeted it very, very loudly. He won't set one here. And, yeah, Cesar Chavanz is the woman, Selena Cesar Chavanz, like, immediately came to mind because, you know, she was in his cabinet. She is extremely talented. She's a black woman who's now actually campaigning for or endorsed the candidate, conservative candidate in her riding. And was very ill-treated. And I think Trudeau has a sore point on this. And I think, yes, that is an issue that not just the NDP, but also the Green Party, Annamie Paul, you know, she raised it during the debate. She goes, you need more people like me up here. And she's her lived experience, too, as a woman of color who said, she brings that to the table in a way that Justin Trudeau obviously can't. But he has to have people like her around him to have him understand what the challenges that the community faces are. And I think that that's a bit of a blind spot that could be, I hate to say the word exploited, that's the wrong word to use, but
yeah,
that could be used by the other parties, the NDP and the Greens, to say, hey, you know, you walk the walk or you talk the talk, but you're not walking the walk. Come over here.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Singh is doing so well in the greater Toronto area, because that shared experience is something that he can talk to firsthand. Young kids coming out of university, top grades, but not being given the top jobs in the law firm or the accounting firm, that sort of thing. And Singh understands that. When he hopped up on stage at that, you know, it was a tragic event after the horrific Islamophobic terrorist murder of that family in London. Mr. Trudeau was there, Premier Ford was there. But it's when Jagmeet Singh got up on stage that you realize the depth of the appreciation that people have for him and for his understanding of the issues that are important to them.
I started off by saying that Mr. Trudeau has had the most diverse cabinet that this country has ever had. And you build your cabinet out of your caucus, you build your staff out of the people that come forward. And so I think we have to be careful not to dismiss people like Anita Anand, who is the woman that secured the vaccines for us as a country, or Ahmed Hussein, who came here as a Somali refugee and worked his way up to being a lawyer and all the way to elected official and into cabinet. There are many, many people like that in the government, like elected in our House of Commons, who are part of the Liberal caucus and part of the Liberal cabinet. And, you know, the Prime Minister's office itself, the number was there that Omar put out, 22% of the population identifies itself as BIPOC, 30% of the Prime Minister's staff identifies itself as BIPOC. This is something that we need to work on as a country on an ongoing basis. But Justin Trudeau has walked the talk. And you work with the people that are in front of you. Not everybody makes cabinet. It doesn't work that way.
I appreciate that. Yeah, no.
So I think we have to be careful. I think we have to be careful in how we characterize this.
I appreciate that, Susan. I'm going to just jump in here because I want to get one more round of questions. Tasha, I'm going to start with you on this quickly. Do we have a ballot box question yet? This thing started as an affordability question and then a vaccine wedge election and then a health wedge. Is there something crystallizing in your mind that Canadians are going to vote for on Monday as we head into the weekend?
Oh, I think the overarching question that won't go away is, why are we in this election? I think that one is a ballot question for a lot of people, and it does not play in Mr. Trudeau's favor at all. There's also ballot questions for people who are, you know, the anti-vaccination crowd. They just look at this as a referendum on the size of government or the role of government. I think everyone's got kind of a different question, but the big one, I think, still is, why are we here? And that is going to be problematic for the Liberals if that, you know, if the more that one sticks with people.
Tom, I got 15 seconds, Tom. Do you want to lay on a ballot box question for me for Monday?
It's going to be easy. I agree completely with Tasha. Mr. Trudeau did this as a project for the Liberals and for himself, threw us into a $650 million needless election in the middle of the fourth wave of a pandemic. And he's going to pay a price for it at the polls.
Susan? Very quickly.
I think it's about health of Canada, COVID recovery, community recovery, childcare, and the climate change.
Scott Reed on the other side. That was the War Room.